Coming up on This Week in Google, I'm Jason Howell filling in for Leo Laporte. Also, Stacey Higginbotham and Jeff Jarvis are here. We're going to talk about Google Cloud next. Stacey's going to break it down for us. Also, Larry and Sergey, MIA at the weekly Friday meetings at Google. Does this mean something bigger? G Suite and Google Home getting some updates. Google's Pixel 3a phone, bunch of leaks there. And then we spend some time talking about how the Australian and UK governments are really tamping down on free speech on social media. There's a lot of change happening. We'll discuss it next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 503, recorded on Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. Get off Stacy's lawn. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/twig. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. Yes, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by ThousandEyes. Companies that run in the cloud rely on ThousandEyes. It's the place they go first to see, understand, and improve the digital experience of their cloud-based applications and services. Do the cloud right and improve services for your customers and employees today. Visit ThousandEyes.com/twit. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, and my, oh my, there's a lot of Google this week. I'm Jason Howell. I'm filling in for Leo, who I believe is in Hawaii, maybe sipping cocktails on the beach. I hope he's on the beach anyways. If he's in Hawaii and he's not on the beach, he's Hawaiian wrong. Joining us today is Jeff Jarvis, and I was given a sheet of paper, so I must read it. The Leonard Toe Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York and the director of the Toe Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. I feel like I should be better at reading that faster.
Whew.
No, you did a good job. You did a very good job.
All right. But
So if you introduce Stacey, I want to tell you where I am, but go ahead and introduce Stacey.
Okay. Also joining us, of course, Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT podcast and awesome person of This Week in Google. How are you, Stacey?
I am well. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. So I hear we have a special guest. If only for
I'm in Rochester. I land this morning. It's frigging snowing. Of course, it's Rochester. And so I'm in the hotel, and of course, the Wi-Fi is awful because it's a hotel. So I go walking down the street, and what do I see but this lovely co-working space called Metro Cowork right here in downtown Rochester. And then I'm in a conference room doing very long calls, and I come out for a brief, and I see someone who says, "Are you Jeff?" So here's a fan.
Hello.
So hold on. Let me hand over the hold on.
We're going to hand off the headset. Hello, welcome to This Week in Google. How are you? What's your name?
My name is Divya Mistry. I'm just a software engineer out here in Rochester.
Don't sell yourself short. Just a software engineer. You're our kind of people. That's great. It's great to meet you. And nice. I'm sure you made Jeff, made his day by recognizing him. He lives for moments like that.
Yes, me too. It's the first time seeing my people.
Right.
Celebrity. Out in open, so it's been great.
It's really nice to meet you. Right. And I'm sure he'll download. He can download and keep that for in his safekeeping. That's awesome.
It really is. It's kind of great. I've done it in Munich, in Sydney, in all kinds of places. I'm walking down the street. I don't know if this happens to you, Stacey, and you, Jason, but people say, are you, oh, TWiG. And then we do the Leo handshake, and it's pretty wonderful. So I just hear Rochester open the door, and they say, TWiG. So it's pretty cool.
Does it ever take you by surprise, though, when that happens? Because you're like not in that mindset, and you're like, oh, I got to get into that mindset.
You know, walking down a street in London, and some guy, I think, oh, my God, what did I pay somebody? What did I do? It's nice.
It doesn't happen to me very often to answer your comment from a few minutes ago.
I travel a lot. That's why.
Yeah.
So
it happened to me once, and I was at a Google event, and the person in line turned around and was like, "Stacey, Stacey Higginbotham from Twig? And I was like, hello?
Do I know you? No, but I know everything about you through the show. That's the weird thing is when people do talk to you, they've heard you talk for hours on hours on hours. And so they know all of these weird, you know, they know things that you said 3 years ago that was just like a throwaway comment that you made. Meanwhile, in their minds, that's become, you know, part of their construct of who you are outside of the show. And so, you know, I've had that instance where they bring up some sort of topic. It's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but yes.
Right. But they don't think so. Lisa writes a paper about 3 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, called Ambient Intimacy. Mm. That just because you follow someone in social, you follow them online, you feel like you know them. Next time you see them, you know it all.
Yep. That sounds about right. Sounds about right. Well, that's awesome. Cool. Well, should we talk Google? Talk about some Google stuff? Because I think there's a lot going on. Let's start with this top story, only because it was one of those things that happened that just felt very Google to me. One week, there was Google announcing its new AI ethics board. The next, it was flat out canceled. Google decided to end it and go back to the drawing board, as they said. And I'm sure this was talked about last week on the show before it was canceled, when it was still the new thing.
None of us were here last week, so none of us know.
Right. So basically, it was one kind of controversy or questionable, you know, character after another. First, Alessandro Acquisti, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name properly. He bowed out initially, saying that this wasn't the right way for him to be involved in tackling the ethical issues of AI. But that was just the beginning. K. Cole James came under fire, significant scrutiny. There were employees at Google, as well as a whole bunch of other people, over comments about the trans community, also the Heritage Foundation's climate change stance, of which K is a member of the Heritage Foundation. Is it Diane or Diane Gubbins came under fire for his ties to drones? And of course, Google has a storied history in the recent year of a lot of backlash around drones and government involvement and all that kind of stuff. It's just one thing after another. And we actually interviewed the author of this Vox article, Kelsey Piper, on Tech News Weekly last week. And Kelsey, you know, basically her position on this is that ethics boards for AI, totally, you know, it's great that companies feel the need to do this. It needs to be done. We need to be looking at the ethical aspects of AI at these early stages. But from what she sees in their efforts and companies like Google doing this, they're not necessarily doing it through the guise of let's improve AI. It really feels more like a publicity stunt. Feels more like,
well, let's cover our rear ends,
try and avoid regulation, and so maybe do it for the right reasons instead of the wrong reasons, and then you won't cancel your effort a week later. what do you guys think?
Well, I you wonder about, so Facebook is going to set up its Supreme Court, and what I hear now is they're going to groups, trying to understand how to go to groups, how to nominate people, how to create it. It's, you're never going to be safe. You're just not. You're going to do something, and you're going to have somebody on there, and somebody's going to disagree with them, and that's the world now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you have a real AI ethics board that's trying to actually hash out meaty issues, there's going to be people with varying disagreements, and yep, it won't matter as long as their contributions are valuable, much like you might hire engineers that kind of have differing opinions on things. But if you're just creating this like board just for optical purposes, then sure, it makes sense that you would be like, oh, not everyone's perfect. And I would say companies can do this. It's fine. I feel like, yes, they should probably have people asking the hard questions. They should probably just have a culture of that.
Yeah.
But we really do need to have an independent body. Maybe it's like an NAB, maybe it's a governmental body, but we really do need to have, and companies need to put their representatives on it. And we need to have representatives from academia. So having these ethics boards captive to a commercial interest is kind of like, you know, letting your cat watch your chickens. Cats kill chickens, right? Yeah.
I think so.
So, yeah.
I've never seen it firsthand, but I assume.
Okay, letting a fox guard your hen house.
There you go. I've also never seen a fox in a hen.
Well, I was going to go with a cat doing something else, and then I was like, ah, screw it, chickens.
Cat and mouse, doesn't matter. We know where you're coming from.
It's not a good idea.
Yeah, it's a bad idea. But it is good to take a close, solid look at this, because we keep seeing time and time again, you know, the projecting into the future as far as the direction of AI and how much influence at such an early stage it feels like it has in everything in the world of technology right now. It just feels as infused by the potential of AI and the capabilities of it. So who knows where that leads 10 years from now. We should be looking at it now for sure to really understand kind of how there can be, you know, how it can be abused, both from an intentional standpoint and an unintentional standpoint. So the efforts are good. I feel like I support that. But and at this time and place in, you know, technology companies totally under the gun, under the microscope, being severely scrutinized right now, it's just a weird time to have this sort of flip-flop, you know. I mean, it doesn't look very good for Google to have this happen at this point.
I think it just exposes how much window dressing these are. So
yeah,
how
totally.
Not silly, but just frivolous.
Mm-hmm. So does Google come back out again down the line with another ethics board and say, we're going to get it right this time? I mean, or do they go a completely different approach?
Why don't we get like a true industry body?
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see Google fund, I mean, Montreal, a lot of the fabulous AI researchers come out of that university, or Carnegie Mellon. They could create and help fund an institute. Big tech companies could participate or could help fund it, but ultimately it should be chaired by and held by somebody who, and have people on the board who are not beholden to these companies.
Right. Which I believe, Stacey, didn't they? I think there's one started at MIT that was funded by the Knight Foundation and a whole bunch of others that, you know, they've already funded something, whether it's the right vehicle or not, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, there was the OpenAI group that Sam Altman did, and I think it was Elon Musk, and that has turned into a kerfuffle. But, and maybe I'm not familiar with the MIT one, but. And we should have several. And it may just be, and another thought is, because AI creeps into every single industry, you may actually want to have not the tech companies talking about this, but actually have industry experts. So have the banking industry come up with their own AI ethics committee and talk about things like redlining. Mm. And that may actually make more sense. Because AI itself isn't interesting. It's the applications and how you tend to use it that cause the problems.
Sure.
And the data sources.
And the data sources.
Data sources, yes.
Or they could just call me and I'll issue an opinion.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's easier.
Good
that's
idea.
That's easier for everyone else. Not, maybe not easier for you, but.
We can make it a weekly feature on the show. Google asks, should we or shouldn't we?
Yes.
I think question. It is a regular feature. It's basically Stacey gives her opinion.
Whether you ask for it or not. Should we be concerned? Should we be worried about the fact that Larry Page and Sergey Brin are not attending the TGIF monthly meeting or weekly town hall meetings at Google anymore?
Soon they forget.
Yeah, because that would be where they would talk about something like this. But they're not there. They're not giving anyone an opportunity to ask them about things like this.
I thought they were trying to get, I guess I looked at this and I was like, I thought they tried to step back a while back. You know, what are they doing? Like, never mind. I was going to say something horribly inappropriate, but they're building space cars and I don't know, going to Burning Man.
they're enjoying.
And they're also trying to empower Sundar.
Well, that's true.
They're not the boss of Google anymore. Sundar is.
Right. Yeah. So when did that happen? This was the shift to Alphabet already 2015. I can't believe it's almost been 4 years.
Yeah,
but
it's a long time.
It's crazy. And I still can't help but call it Google. 4 years later, and I'm still calling it Google. But they took that was their goal with that. As part of that was to kind of restructure, to step out of it, even though. After that, they still, one of them continued to make it to these TGIF meetings for like the next 3 years, and it's just been this year that both of them are MIA. Meanwhile, this has been possibly one of Google's most controversy filled years. So many things happening from drones to China search, sexual harassment, all these things happening that I'm sure employees would love to talk to them about. So it's easy to see this in combination with that and think, oh, well, isn't it convenient that they don't have to have to face, their own employees and actually talk about this stuff. But maybe it really is just them stepping out of the limelight even further.
This would be a good time, personally. Yeah. I'd be like, yeah.
You know that thing? You know that thing we said 3 years ago? Yeah, we're doing that now because, yeah, we want to be on the beach somewhere.
On Google Island. Maybe they already live on Google Island.
Oh, that's
they're building a new nation, and we don't know it.
They're building Google Island further, and the best way to do it is to live there.
The way the world's going, I want to move there.
I want to go to there.
There's Google Island, and then there's Google Island Underground, and that's what they're really working on is their bunkers. Make sure they're protected.
They better be careful. They might get bored through.
That's true. Elon Musk has a plan. Let's see here.
So the drones, the Google drone, is that not April Fool's, is it?
What's that?
No, they've been testing. So the Australia. Jeff, mm-hmm. You skipped a story.
No, it's okay. We don't have to go in order. There's no order here.
We'll be here till 4 a.m. and Karsten's wife will be thrumming her fingers on the table at home. So no.
There is no order. I think drones is great. We were kind of talking, Project Wing. Basically, the news here is that it's now operating officially in Canberra, Australia. They've been testing this in a suburb near Canberra for a year. And now they're kind of rolling it out to like four suburbs. It's kind of an official thing. A dozen local businesses. Is this the first area that is officially being served by Project Wing? I think it is.
I think so. And I think the April Fool's joke you're talking about is kind of relates to this, actually. Was on April Fool's, they did a Amazon drone delivery blimp thing. However, Amazon actually has a patent that was granted, I think it was like April 2nd, for a delivery drone that was attached to basically a hot air balloon. So that was an April Fool's joke. Like, that's real. It's not. It's called the Amazon mothership was the April Fool's joke. But the patent exists, and Amazon, I guess, was or is looking at using some kind of quieter drone. And this is a big issue. So what Google found in their Canberra testing was that dogs went nuts. People hated it. Mm-hmm. It was just because drones, they're really irritating.
Along with drone pilots.
Yeah, those people can be irritating too. So this says that Wing they have quieter delivery models. So they responded to that. But, I don't think they're blimps or hot air balloons. So yeah. I don't know.
They're still going to make noise. Yeah.
This is really like, drones sound convenient, but I'm like, this is really a convenience issue. Same thing with things like, you think we're complaining about our sidewalks being like cluttered with micro-mobility with scooters and bikes and everything? Imagine when we have last-mile delivery robots just like vrooming around. And again, and I hate to say this because I used to not be so pro-regulation, but I am just kind of like, God, tech firms, just stop throwing crap out there and annoying people, and I don't know, think about the consequences. Maybe we don't all have to, do everything all at once. Get off my lawn.
Slow down. Quit innovating. Quit your innovation addiction.
Or just give the infrastructure some time to adapt.
Yeah. Oh, but that's never going to happen.
It will happen. We can't say that it's never going to happen. Otherwise, we're giving them the keys to our future.
You're right. That is a really good point.
Stacey, they already have the keys and the lock and the door.
No, they don't. We can. I'm in Austin. We voted to kick Uber out for a while. It actually happened.
Austin is normal in any possible definition.
Well, no, but we did bring in scooters. We actually allowed for limited trials. We put in some regulations. We tested them out around South By and put in more regulations there. We're basically trying to work out with companies, but not falling victim to their blackmail tactics. And I think that's what we need to do.
Later on in the show, believe it or not, I can talk about a regulatory regime that I like, which I don't think I've talked about before.
All right.
Fake.
All right.
You think.
Personal.
Could be new content. Could be old content.
I have this problem with students all the time. I make them tell me, not, if I repeat myself, don't just sit there and say, oh, old Jarvis is doing it again. You got to tell me that I said this before. They do.
Because it turns out you've said a lot of things. It's hard to keep track of it all.
I only have so many things to say.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Before you start repeating yourself. That's a story of my life, too.
Have I talked about the Leicester Shield threat? Oh, yes.
No, you've never mentioned this.
No, of course not. Never.
Karsten would know. Thank you, Karsten for speaking
know.
The truth. Should we talk about Google Cloud? Because I know this is today news. This is yesterday and today. Google Cloud Next 2019 happening. And I sat down to do my homework. And I'm like, all right, well, this is big news. I better understand this. And then like eight paragraphs in, and I had birds swirling over my head. Because while I understand the consumer implications of why it's important for all these things to be taking place, from the in the weeds perspective, I'm completely lost. So tell me, Stacey.
Okay, Higginbotham here.
Yes. Join me in the weeds.
Exactly. Take us into the weeds. What were you excited to hear about?
Okay, so we talked about this on today's show because, let me organize my thinking. All right, the big news is Google Anthos. And the other big news item that I thought was exciting was Google Cloud Run. And they're sort of related. So Anthos is a new cloud infrastructure platform for Google. And basically what Google's done here is made this really awesome jujitsu move where it has turned its weakness into a strength. So other cloud providers like Amazon and Microsoft are actually far and away bigger than Google when it comes to having customers adopt them. So Google's like, all right. And Google has great tech. I don't understand the disconnect there, but it's there. Google said, all right, we're not going to be number one or number two. Let's open everything up and make it so people can run wherever they want, which is awesome. So what you can do, well, you can run on Microsoft's cloud, you can run on Amazon's cloud, you can run on Google's cloud, and you can tie all those applications together. So that is what Anthos is doing.
Don't the others have to cooperate in that?
No.
Have they cooperated?
No, Anthos becomes this dashboard where you can pull in all of your data from all of your applications running in various different clouds and on-premise. And the reason why I was excited about this is because I am an IoT buff, and we've got so many companies who are like, I'm going to do this calculation and stuff on-prem, this I'm going to do in the cloud. So this is a way to tie it all together using Kubernetes. And so, yay! And Kubernetes is a framework for managing applications across the cloud and in containers, and it's awesome, and Google invented it a while back, and it's open source, and yay. Okay, so that's Anthos. Questions? Comments?
I'm excited because you're excited, Stacey.
It is a really big deal.
Interoperability, but that sounds like a great thing. You know, that sounds like a lot of flexibility.
It is a hard technical challenge. So there's a lot of questions here. Like, how do you handle security for your applications running in between clouds? How is Google going to track price changes? Like, there's going to be a lot to dig into here. But at its face, which is all I've got right now, are their blog posts. You know, it's actually really cool. So, Cloud Run. Cloud Run gets us into serverless. Do we remember what serverless is, y'all?
I mean, I can imagine it. It means there's no server.
Yes.
Oh, okay, so good.
What's cool about serverless computing? And you've got this with Google has this. Amazon has it. Amazon's is Lambda. So what happens with serverless is you're using a container, and that container is going to contain your application and all the libraries you need to run that application, which means now you've got this cool little container that you can just shove onto a server in the cloud. You can shove it down into, you know, a server at the edge. You can run it anywhere. You can actually run them on, I have someone who's running containers on light bulbs, you guys. So the idea.
What?
Yeah, you package up your application, you run it on a light bulb, a connected light. And so it's very cool. That's why containers are cool. They're tidy. They run anywhere. Yay. Okay.
Nice.
So.
Sounds like it's tailor-made for viruses and malware and bad stuff spread around and not be trackable.
Like pack some malware into a container and run it. There's a lot of security features. So Kubernetes helps you manage those kind of security features. And we're about to get way out of my depth here. But I can tell you this is something that people have thought of and there are ways to deal with that. But I can't tell you a whole lot more about it. Okay, so with Cloud Run, I kind of went off on a little Kubernetes tangent. So with Cloud Run, what you could, or with serverless, what you can do is you throw those up and you run them for only when you need them. And this is really cool because you don't have to provision an entire server for what you're trying to do. You just are like, oh, I need to run it. Running, and then it shuts down. And so you don't pay as much. This is awesome for IoT. This is awesome for any functional things like I'm going to turn on an application when someone logs into my website or when someone signs up for something or clicks through on a ticket, you know, a mobile ticket. It's going to spin up a quick serverless infrastructure, or serverless Lambda or I guess Cloud Run. And then it'll be like, oh, I'm running the application. Then I run down and I shut down. So that's what serverless is. It's awesome. It's cheaper. Yay. And Cloud Run is a way to do that. And you can do it across multiple clouds as well. So this is really awesome. It's HTTP driven container. So your container is going to get an HTTP URL and you basically run that wherever you want in a really easy way for developers to run it.
Ooh, and okay. So you're right. So you're not just pulling a media type, a photo from here or there, you're pulling code from here or there.
Yes. Yes. A container is your application and all the code you need to run it. So then you just like fling that around wherever you want to run it in a really easy way. And it's pretty awesome. And so that's the super duper cloud stuff for all the super duper nerdies out there. And I would love to hear more from y'all if you're a developer about how easy this is going to be to use or what you're worried about, just because I want to know. Okay. And now we can talk about G Suite. G Suite on my Google Home.
Okay. So G Suite, yes. And we will, let's see here. Let's scroll down because I think they ended up in the changelog. But the changelog is like huge. So any stuff. No, it's okay. Because there was a bunch of G Suite. And this is the stuff that I could connect to a little bit more. In my mind, I could attach myself to G Suite a little bit more. But yeah, so G Suite, Google Home, right? Because now there's more assistant
functionality. Yeah, you can put it on assistant. And I haven't tried this yet because I'm constantly sad by my Google Home experience. But yes, theoretically, because it works on Assistant. Oh, yeah. We should do a whole show on that.
Okay. We can talk about that in a second.
Okay. Yeah. But yes, theoretically, I could now access my G Suite calendar and data on my Google Assistant and presumably my Google Home.
So is this, when I read this, I immediately thought of you, Jeff. Because you have historically been the one to complain about the fact that you have a G Suite account. That's your main account, right? Your Google Apps account, let's say. And so a lot of these features never hit you or they hit you much, much later. Was this news that made you happy? Like, does this feel like a temporary, very strange?
I think it gets better. And then so I discovered a new problem this week. So I finally found out on my Chromebook how I can have – I didn't realize that for one click I could go from one account to another account, right? Hallelujah. So my college account now is on Google. Hallelujah. Nope. That administrator says this must be the first account you sign into. And then my G Suite says mine must be the first you sign into. It's just they keep on making – I just got a headache. I know I didn't answer your question, but I just want to whine again.
No.
I want to complain. I have Jeff's problem, and I was excited by this news. But I will say that I have yet to try it because it's been a busy day.
Yeah, yeah. But you also are very disappointed with Google Home. I want to circle back around to that because I've been incredibly disappointed with Google Home lately. I feel
what's disappointed you folks?
Well, you go first because you brought it up. Tell me what's disappointing you, Stacey.
So mine is, well, mine is currently unplugged because my family hates it. It's
well, there's news right there.
And I think I've talked about this. The voice match is terrible.
Yeah.
And so I turned that off, but then I have no control over who accesses things in my house. So that makes me sad. And then I also can't access, again, maybe now I'll be able to access my calendars, but I will only be able to access my calendars. And I just, and a lot of the functionality that is native, I guess, for lack of a better word, to Amazon is still like a skill on the Google Home. Mm. So I have to still ask various apps to do things, like ask Harmony to turn on the television.
Right.
And then this random voice comes on and is like, turning on television. You're like, who's a what?
Who are you?
Yeah. Why are you inside my Google Home? So that's a disappointment. And so I'm like, Google, fix this stuff, right? And they're like, here, have John Legend for a temporary amount of time to be your Google voice. And I'm like, I do not care about John Legend. So that is my frustration.
They hoisted John Legend onto you. I did not have that happen. For me,
they foisted him. I don't think you hoist him onto me.
Oh, sorry. Thank you for the correction. Carson is very appreciative of that too. That is not the only time I will put my foot in my mouth. My problems have been just that there was a time way back when, wavy lines on the screen, denote that we're going into a flashback period here, where Google Home worked without much effort to do pretty much everything I asked it to do. I knew there were limitations. I worked within those limitations. If I asked it to play this song, it played that song, no big deal. Then I trained, I educated my children on how to use it to play songs as well. And it always worked. And it was magical because I had like a 5-year-old kid being able to play whatever song she wanted to, given that there were parental controls, so it was nothing inappropriate, but like she could control it and say, hey, I want to listen to Katy Perry, blah, 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 or whatever. And it worked. And now we're in a stage, I feel like there's been some sort of shift in the past, however many recent months, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, somewhere in there, where I feel like we are constantly fighting it. Like we're doing the same thing we ever did, but now we get these weird error messages that come back like, okay, I'll play that song. And then it'll wait for a second. It'll say, sorry, that playlist is empty. And you're like, I didn't ask for a playlist. I asked for that song that I know is in the library and you've played it a million times when I say this thing, but you're not doing it now. And you're not really telling me why you're not doing it. You're just making up this thing about a playlist that I don't even know what you're talking about. And that's just one example. And so the more that happens, the more now I'm not the only one swearing at the Google Home when it doesn't work. Now my kids are because they're like, Google Home is stupid. I'm like, don't call it stupid. It can hear you. Let's call it something nicer because maybe that's why it's not being nice. But it's really frustrating. And it used to be amazing. And now like we're just fighting it all the time. That's been my experience.
And we've had issues. They've improved it, and then it went away again with the song choices. So it would constantly, instead of playing the most popular version of a song, it would play the karaoke version, which, you know, when my daughter asks for a version of a song, she doesn't want the karaoke version. That should never be your default.
Right.
Unless you're a karaoke bar.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Maybe that has something to do with like parental controls. Like if you're blocking, you know, if they're asking for a song that has.
So I don't have parental controls, but I will. I'll bring this up because this is something that has been on my mind and I'm very curious for resources on this. In August, my daughter turns 13, which on the internet makes her an adult.
Yes. Right.
So all of our accounts that she is tied into will suddenly become. Totally opaque to me, and all the parental controls I've set up go instantly away.
Oh.
And that's on Amazon and that's on Google because 13 is when
you don't have the option to just say I don't care about the parent. It's 18 to me.
Or force parental controls. You don't because
there's no. I mean, if once you're above 13, so now I'm like, I mean, I have a good enough relationship with my daughter. We talk about these things, but I don't want to I need some transition time or periods where, you know, like.
It's all moving too fast.
Well, it is. I mean, like, basically that day in August, she becomes a legal adult on the internet, basically. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. Ah!
Right. Right.
I wasn't prepared for this. Dating.
So she's not dating. I'm not worried about that. But yeah, and there's a lot of stuff on the internet that you really shouldn't have access to.
Yeah.
So this is my issue.
You know what, Stacey? You trust her.
I do.
So yeah, you trust her. And she's going to see some stuff in life anyway and has to learn how to deal with it. And the more, in a way, she sees it now, I could argue, maybe.
No.
The more her close relationship. No, I don't mean to see all bad stuff. But when she does come across something now and knows to say, Mom, what's that? Hold on to that relationship while you can.
Right.
You know, that's all I'm saying.
Yes, but there are things on the internet that developmentally no 13-year-old's really appropriate for. And I'm not.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And so that's, I'm like, yeah, she can talk to me. But I mean, there are things on the internet that traumatize me. And I'm a full-blown adult who knows that people suck. So I don't know. Anyway.
My kids yes. are older, obviously. But I have no parents who said that their kids kind of said, oh, I know what I don't want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. I went away. No, I don't want that. And I think you've risen. Jesus. You've raised a great daughter and you trust her. And I'm going to bet she's going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll be. Yeah, I have confidence in her being okay. I just want to have a little bit of control over. I still want to have control over parts of her internet life. And that is not crazy.
Right. So not all parents are going to agree that 13 is the age that suddenly you give them the keys to the internet car.
And And, you know, my parenting philosophy on the internet is, you know, I tell her there are things you can never unsee. And so choose widely when you click on links. And that's so far working. Hey, Jeff, everyone in the chat room is yelling at you because they say you're not on your headset mic.
Yes, I am.
They're not really yelling at you.
It's the room. Yeah, I think it's kind of a boxy room.
Yeah. If I move this closer.
We'll stick a pillow over your head. Well, there you go. Now everyone in the chat room can be like, aha.
Okay, we've addressed it.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry.
It's okay. We'd rather have you like this than not have you at all.
So can we talk about the Google Maps moneymaker? Because I didn't see it on our rundown, but I saw this story and I was like,
I saw Google it added. Maps? I didn't see when it was added. So it's in there. Let's talk about that after we take this break because we got to thank a sponsor. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about maps and making money and other words that start with M. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Capterra. We've all read some surprising online reviews. Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for, if you're trying to find the best happy hour in town, whatever you happen to be looking for, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. At this point, I feel like as internet citizens, we are trained to know that there are reviews of the things that we might be interested in looking into, and that is probably a good idea to look into those. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? I read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at capterra.com/twig. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. They have more than 800,000 reviews of products from real software users. So you can discover everything that you need to make an informed decision. You can search more than 700 specific categories of software. Everything crossing all over the place, from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. I'm sure there's plenty of other very specific categories of apps that you can look at. And yes, there are. 700 is quite a few. So it could be kind of fun to just see, like, hey, I didn't realize there were so many yoga studio management softwares out there. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra every month to find the right tools for their business. And if you have a business, you know, like, spending a little bit of time now to find the right solution is going to save you a lot of time later. Because if you pick the wrong solution and then you take the time to get to know it, to integrate it and everything, and finding out later that it was the poor decision for whatever reason, at some points that could be too late, but you definitely waste a lot of time and money in the process. So check out Capterra's free website. Visit Capterra.com/twig, and you can find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. That's Capterra.com/twig, CAPTERRA.com/twig. Capterra software selection simplified, and we thank Capterra for their support. So maps, let's see here. So I didn't get a chance to read this story, but I did see that it was added at the top, in the top block here, the Bloomberg story that says Google's big moneymaker could be maps on your phone. I feel like it's been a big moneymaker for Google for a long time already. Maps is one of the apps that I use possibly more than almost any other app on my phone. I use it daily. So what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, there's two parts to this story that are interesting. One is, as a consumer, we'll start seeing more personalized options for us around me, or so based on our maps and location. So that was interesting, more than what we already see. So it pointed out that, you know, restaurants and places can already buy ads to get the, like, the little pin. I don't know what those are called. The little pin drop thing.
I don't know what it's
pin, called. The pin. Thing on the map. And then, so Google's basically pushing forward and monetizing that more. And so we're going to see things like personalized results, suggestions for us based on where we've been and what we like. So here's a vegan restaurant near you. So we're going to, I'm like, I don't know if I want that, but who knew if I wanted Google search ads?
I use that all the time. Just today, I'm in Rochester.
I
use it constantly. And yeah, advertising could actually be somewhat beneficial there, where you see who's going to spend the money to get me, who knows what I like, it's targeted. You know, could that be beneficial? I don't know.
So they're going to do more there. And then the second part of this is for developers who use the map. So Google has made their maps available to developers. They've changed the pricing on that. So, and it's much, much, much more expensive. So there is a person in here who's got an app that they use Google Maps to show people where they can find drugs at pharmacies near them. And basically, before Google changed their pricing plan, this guy's startup got 750,000 free map views a month and was charged 50 cents for every 1,000 views on top of that. But now Google is starting to charge after 30,000 views, and the cost is $7 now per 1,000 views. So his costs were basically nothing, and now they're $5,000 a month.
Wow.
So Google is offering people a credit. So small developers get a credit for use of their map, so a $200 credit. But this was kind of an interesting side note, which means, are we going to see fewer apps that can take advantage of location?
Yeah.
Or will they switch to other maps? I don't know.
That's the question that kind of comes to mind for me, because maps integration, like I think I take it for granted because it's so easy for developers to tap into it. Developers know that if they bring in like a Google map, they're adding instant value to their app and people will recognize it and respect the quality of it. But that could potentially rule out kind of the kind of lower install base third-party developers, or at least discourage them and maybe point them in a different direction for a map solution. But I don't know. I guess we'd have to see how that pans out. It is kind of interesting that we haven't seen as much monetization around maps now that I think about it. I guess I've just always kind of, it's something that I use and it's highly valuable information, right? Our location.
Well, I'll put it another way. Waze has tried a lot to monetize over the years. You know, Dunkin' Donuts ads. Do you want to change where you're going right now and go to the nearest Dunkin' Donuts? No thanks.
Yeah.
And so it never made a lot of sense in Waze. Whereas maps use differently. Waze you only use when you're driving somewhere. That's
right,
it.
Right.
And maps, I do. When I get to a new city, I say, what's around me? Where's the nearest used bookstore? I think there's a lot of geographic uses that haven't been plumbed yet.
Agree. I mean, yeah, I was in Helsinki last week or Stockholm last week. I don't remember. Ooh. And isn't Waze owned by Google?
Yep.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. And the first thing I did was, restaurant near me. And then the second thing I did was, dear God, it's so cold. How can I find more gloves?
Did you go to the restaurant I recommended to you, Stacey? Did you go to my restaurant I recommended in Stockholm?
It was like a Monday or something, and it was closed.
Oh, no.
Was that
the time?
sorry.
The time I had, it was closed. I was sad.
Was that the OK Jarvis command that pulled up the restaurant recommendation?
That's what we need.
That's what we need.
OK Jarvis, I'm traveling to Europe. The following cities. Tell me where I should eat.
OK Jarvis, how do you pronounce Leichtenstein?
You go to Storehof,
and in Copenhagen you go to Fiskebaren.
See? OK Jarvis, we all needed OK Jarvis in our life.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of money making off of services, it seems like Google's on a little bit of a tear. I mean, obviously, Google is an ad company at its core. That's why it's been as successful as it is. So bringing ads or some sort of ad integration into Maps makes sense. Now apparently on Android TV, if you have an Android TV device, and this isn't just like a standalone device like a Shield TV, if you happen to have like a Sony TV with Android TV built in as its like core OS, you might start seeing sponsored rows in the interface, sponsored ads embedded into Android TV. I also saw news that with the assistant updates that we're seeing, now it's going to start pulling back results that have sponsored ad results, which that kind of makes a little bit more sense to me because like when I do a Google search, I get these sponsored links and I don't really think badly about that because a lot of times they are still relevant. So that makes, I guess, a little bit of sense with assistant, but clogging up your Android TV space, that might make a lot of people upset.
And Google Assistant is, as long as it's not delivered via voice, I hate ads delivered via voice. That's going to be a real tough.
Oh.
That's going to be, is it a Rubicon? We'll call it a Rubicon or burning the ships kind of moment.
Yeah.
Paradigm shift.
I don't believe that in the case of Assistant, that's what's happening. I think it's, okay, I think what it is you do a query and it doesn't necessarily know how to answer it by voice. So it says, here, I found some results for you. And if you've ever done those queries and then it gives you like a search result or whatever, now it's going to start including sponsored items in that list as well. So you might see an ad for Expedia, just one example. And I don't know how much that bugs me. I don't know how much any of this bugs me. I guess even with the sponsored row on Android TV, I'd probably get used to just not seeing it anymore, even though it's there. You know, block
true.
It out of
my view. I mean, I had a Kindle where, you know, I paid extra for the Kindle without ads, and then yeah. I got a Kindle with ads. And yeah, I find them amusing because I'm like, oh, wow, look at this scurrilous, exciting romance novel that you think I want.
Are they targeted ads?
Apparently not, because my husband gets the same ones. Well, he may have a secret romance thing. I don't know.
whose dog is that? I got to know.
It's my dog. I'm sorry. My family is home and my dog is excited.
It's okay. Your dog is forgiven.
Mom's been ignoring me. And finally, you've come.
Mom went in this room and shut the door on me so I couldn't be there. So
she talks to herself.
This is all
I don't hear it. It's really strange. I'm worried about Mom.
Right. She's not talking to me. Are you guys excited about the lower cost Pixels? Apparently the Pixel 3a is going to happen sometime soon. There's like all these things that keep happening.
I want to hear from you, Dr. Android. I still have my Pixel 2 and I'm quite happy with it.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is still definitely in the kind of rumory category, but things keep happening.
It's been like, there a long time. Yeah.
It has, and supposedly it's going to happen sometime, you know, possibly before I/O. But Google very recently, last week, updated its Google Play Developer Console, and in doing so, listed two new devices, codenamed Bonito and Sargo, which have been the code names that we've been hearing for the Pixel 3a and the Pixel 3a XL. These are mid-range devices, as far as we know. And then they also ended up adding a navigation option on the Play Store to Pixel 3a and the 3a XL and the Nest Hub Max. All three of those devices have not been officially announced yet, only to then remove them, of course, once news actually broke. So these were accidentally leaked once again by Google. So we know that they are something. They are something that exists. And then Hiroshi Lockheimer from the Android team has also hinted on Twitter that he has an unreleased phone that he's taken pictures of, but that he can't share those pictures because he doesn't want to out the phone. So definitely going to happen. It's a mid-range Pixel device, so I think it lacks the glass back in lieu of probably more of like a plastic casing, if I'm not mistaken. Less RAM, 4 gigs of RAM, a 1080p display.
4 gigs of RAM, that is nothing.
Remember when that was something? Yeah. And now it's competing with like 12 gigs, which is probably overboard, but still. Snapdragon 670, so it's a lower, you know, lower classification processor. Yeah. I don't know. Mid-range pixels, basically. And I think, I don't know if the strategy with the mid-range Pixel, like what that's going to be, is it just to bring more people into the Pixel family, or is it to target kind of?
I saw a story just now. I don't think it's on the rundown that people, Pixel buyers are mainly switching from Samsung.
Yes, that is in the rundown actually, and that's a good that's a good thing to throw in there.
That may explain some of the strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did I put that? Yeah, the majority of, I'm trying to find that. I know it's in here somewhere. Basically, from what I can remember, the report essentially said that those users coming over to the Pixel and to the OnePlus 6T aren't necessarily coming from Apple's side. They aren't coming from iPhones, but they're coming from Samsung devices by and large. And of course, you know, you've got Pixels. Apparently, for the last quarter of last year, the Pixel 3 was, performed really strongly in Verizon stores. The OnePlus 6T is the first time that a OnePlus phone has been in a carrier store. It was in T-Mobile, and it did really well in Q4. And that's all great, but it's just not doing what I think, at least in the terms of the Pixel, what Google wanted, which was to pull people over from the iPhone back into Android land.
Here's the numbers. So this is a Verge story. Counterpoint Research, 51% of Pixel 3 buyers were formerly Samsung Galaxy owners. Yeah. Only 18% migrated from iPhones and 14% from Motorola devices.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So
who still has Motorola devices?
Well, actually, the Moto G series is a pretty popular series. And that's like a mid-ranger. Okay. It's a mid-ranger, but it's by and large, it's seen as a really good quality low to mid-range device for the cost. Because I think they cost somewhere around like $300, $400-ish, and they're still, you know, they still do a really good job in that price range. So that might be part of it. But you're right. You don't hear as much about Motorola as you used to.
The more I think about it, the more I think Google getting more range in the Pixels is good news for us Pixel fans.
Yeah. I would agree.
I want a Pixel, but I don't want to pay $1,000 for my new phone.
Or even if I want my $1,000 phone, I want Google to keep investing in it so I don't invest in something that's going to go away.
Yeah.
As Google has seen to do.
There's a lot of value there in knowing that if you're going to spend X amount of dollars on your smartphone, you want to know that it's going to get that ongoing support. And to me, that's one of the bigger, you know, kind of key benefits of buying the Pixel. It might have its shortcomings, you know, in different places, but you know Google's going to be dedicated to it for possibly longer and definitely quicker on a release, you know, to release basis. They're going to put those updates out to this phone before most other phones even get them. So there's a lot of value there, but a lot of people don't understand that value either. Like a lot of mainstream users probably don't really even pay attention to that. Like, yeah, well, it's a Google phone. That's why I got it. They don't know why. You know what I mean? Like, they're not as clued into the idea of, like, the update schedule and why that really matters.
So. And, you know, to be fair, they shouldn't have to be.
No, they shouldn't. You're right.
That's why Google made a branded phone. It's so you could be like, you will get the best and we will control and make sure it works.
Yeah.
And that's what people want. They don't actually want to think about update schedules.
No. They should, yeah, you're absolutely right. They shouldn't have to do that. Let us nerds do that for them.
Exactly. Although if they want to watch the show and ask questions, we're happy to take them.
Absolutely. Also, let's see here. I saw this right before. I just thought it was kind of interesting. Apparently, Google has created I don't know how to describe this. It's an art exhibit in Milano. It's a temporary art exhibit where they're showing three different rooms with different aesthetics. One aesthetic is essential, one is vital, and one is transformative. And these rooms are all like high design rooms with like the Pixel color palette, kind of the pastel color palettes. And they outfit anyone going through the space with a wearable that Google designed that has embedded in the bands. It's a specially made wristband that measures biological response. So stuff like heart activity, breathing rate, skin temperature, skin conductivity, and motion, and tracks how you respond to each of the rooms as you're walking through them. So afterwards, when you're done, you can take a look at the data and see how relaxed you were. And maybe
somebody needs a real job.
Yeah, I couldn't quite understand. I was like, I was trying to find some clues here.
This is perfect. So Google takes this data when I am walking through, I don't know which different room is called, but when I'm walking with through the vital room.
Yes.
And I am super relaxed and happy, then that data could be used like, hey, Pottery Barn, Stacy is this type of consumer for you.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the future, and it's creepy as all get out.
Who knows? Maybe they're going to take this this technology and put it into their Pixel Watch whenever that happens, if it ever happens.
Well, Pfizer and other companies are doing research with lighting and sound, along with wearables, to measure stress response in people, mm-hmm. and they're using it for smoking cessation programs. So there is a legitimate need to, not need, rationale behind understanding how I might feel about something that is not just because you want to sell me stuff.
Sure.
And but I bet it's to sell me stuff.
At the end of the day, probably so. And it's a temporary art exhibit. Most of us, if not all of us, will never see this. But who knows? Let's see here. I'm trying to get through the googly stuff before we go out of that. YouTube TV. Price hike coming to YouTube TV. You remember when it was $35 and it was such a deal? Now it's going to jump up to $50. $50 a month for Google TV. For YouTube TV. And that's because they actually just secured a deal with Discovery. So they're going to add the Discovery Channel, HGTV, Food Network, TLC, ID, Animal Planet, Travel Channel, and Motor Trend. They probably paid a lot for Motor Trend.
So basically, they're recreating the cable bundle.
Exactly.
They've allowed new people.
Yes. Yeah. You know, at one point, the over-the-top idea seemed like a way to save money because you're cutting the cord, you're getting out of the cable thing, and you're just going on the internet and picking out and choosing and whatever. And yeah, we're definitely drifting away from that now because all of these services, all of the OTT services are raising their rates, adding more, you know, obviously, because users probably want more. If you're a subscriber, you probably want access to more channels, of course. Well, you got to pay for those. So now you're paying, I don't know if you're paying exactly what you were paying before, but it's not much of a savings if there is any savings there anymore. I don't know. Do either of you guys have satellite or do you do these services?
No.
We do.
I still
have
it by us. What are you going to have in Seattle?
We cut the cord a long time, like 2008. So we have, right now we have a Netflix subscription. I guess we're Amazon Prime, so we have that. At this moment in time, we have HBO, but we just subscribe when we want and then stop.
Yeah.
And then we do the same with Sling TV for sports for the playoffs. If we add it all up, especially because my husband gets the hockey and the baseball packages, mm-hmm. it's probably cable. Mm-hmm.
But it's not on. Yeah. But it's not ongoing the entire year. You jump in when you need it. You jump out when you don't. Right.
Well,
right.
It's your river. It's about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's usually how we use these services.
We put our left foot in. We put our left foot out. We get the HBO and then we take it out. Okay, I'm sorry. So much shopping.
Okay. It's okay. You've given some crafty individual the ammo they need to do a nice This Week in Google remix. And I'm putting the challenge out there. Somebody's got to take us up on it. That's the only time that we end up doing these services when something like the Olympics. The Olympics is a prime example. The Olympics are happening. We'll jump in. We'll do a month. And inevitably, we'll forget to cancel it. And so then we'll do another month, and then we'll actually cancel it. That's usually how it goes. Did either of you watch Netflix's Black Mirror Bandersnatch? Or
nope.
Did you hear about this?
Nope.
I hate Choose Your Own Adventure.
See, now I have not watched this, and I'm kind of leery too, because I kind of want to sit down and watch, have them choose the story for me. I don't want to have to make decisions. But I'm a huge Black Mirror fan, so I'm kind of surprised that I haven't just broken down and watched Bandersnatch, because apparently it's really good from what people seem to say, but it is a choose your own adventure or interactive storytelling, because Netflix is being sued by Choose Your Own Adventure right now. So we should maybe rename it something else. But apparently YouTube is getting in on this as well. They're going to start creating some of their own Choose Your Own Adventure programs. They're restructuring their programming staff to make room for this new approach. Mm-hmm. At the same time that they're cutting costs on some of their content, so they're focusing more on live events and reality shows. This seems really expensive, though, to do Choose Your Own Adventure. So I don't know. I guess I'm not surprised that YouTube would jump into it if it's a trend and they want to be at the forefront of the trend.
It feels so weird because TV is such a lean back experience.
Yeah,
so I'm like,
I agree.
I mean, and granted, as I have already illustrated, I am old and want people to get off my lawn. So maybe this just isn't appealing to me, but it would be appealing to others.
Yeah.
Younger people.
Netflix does have another Choose Your Own Adventure. They might have a few others, but one of them that they do have is Minecraft. It's a Minecraft story that, you know, obviously for kids, and you basically navigate your way through the story with the remote. And I have watched my kids play that. Play that. I don't know what you call it when you're watching and playing at the same time. And they really enjoyed it. They totally got into it. They're not even Minecraft fans, and they enjoyed the process. 9 and almost 6.
Okay.
They're much more into Roblox. Their jam is Roblox, not Minecraft. Similar.
Oh, okay. I was like, what are roadblocks like?
Roblox, which, yeah, it's same, but different kind of.
Got it.
So yeah, maybe we're just outside of the demographic for Choose Your Own Adventure movies.
Or we're just lazy. It's possible we're lazy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't watch much TV anyways. Like, I hardly watch TV nowadays. So that when I do, I really just want to put something on and not be part of the process.
Well, you still want an auteur. You still want somebody to do the work and have vision. And you're trying to, part of what you're doing is you're kind of sussing out their brain of where they're going to go and where's this going to end. And, oh, I'm smart. I figured it out. And then it takes away half of that fun.
Yeah. Like, ultimately, what I want is the best story. So, great. Have a mode where I can walk through it if I want to. Also have a mode where you give me the best story, the best kind of curated walkthrough or something. I don't know how you do that.
But maybe the best story for you is some other story is the idea
here.
That's
true. Yeah.
And I don't like them because I want to see all the stories.
Yeah.
And then I get frustrated. So that's why, like, Choose Your Own Adventure books, I hated as a kid because I had to read them all and... because I'm a little OCD and it was just like very distressing to me.
So would you put a mark on the page next
yes.
to the thing? You would?
I had little
I've been here before.
Tabs. Yeah. Okay. This one. And then I'd mark off everyone that I've chosen. And
yeah,
it was, and sometimes I would just read them cover to cover and just like reassemble them in my brain.
Whoa.
So
that's interesting.
Well, if you wanted to read them all, you just had to do that.
If you wanted to be a completist, yeah, you've wanted everything.
I'm a completist.
I think the thing that, like, I actually liked Choose Your Own Adventure, but the thing that I did not like about them, and my kids have read a few of them, and I encounter this with them, is that when you go through and you don't make it to the end, like you said, Stacey, you have to start over. And so then, you know, you do that two or three times, and you're reading the same beginning stuff.
Right.
Until your path goes separate ways, you know, versus where you've been before. So it feels very repetitive and not, you know, the enjoyment just dwindles.
That's why you have to
time.
Read it all the way through and then
once.
Just reassemble it.
Yes. I hadn't thought of it like that. It's a good idea.
I'm highly efficient.
Yes, no kidding. Let's take a break. And then when we come back, we can talk a little bit about... Well, we can, of course, we've got the change log. We can also talk a little bit about
this government. government stuff.
Yeah, the government stuff. I feel like we need to touch on some of that stuff because there's a lot of stuff coming to a head. And I know you wrote something, Jeff, that we can talk about as well. So let's take a break and then we'll jump into some of that. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Admit it, you think that cybercrime happens to everyone else. It never happens to you, right? We all think that all these things happen to other people. Couldn't possibly happen to us. It never has, after all. So what do we have to worry about? No one's going to target my passwords or my credit card details. You're probably wrong, though. Stealing data from unsuspecting people on public Wi-Fi happens to be one of the simplest and cheapest ways for hackers to make money. When you leave your internet connection unencrypted, you might as well be writing your passwords and your credit card numbers on a huge billboard for everyone to see, or at least the hackers that know how to get to it and see that billboard. That's why I use ExpressVPN, and I recommend that you do too, to protect yourself from cyber criminals. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps. They're super simple to use. They run seamlessly in the background on your computer, your phone, your tablet. And turning it on is literally a single click. It's really nicely integrated into Android. You see a little VPN icon up in your notification pane. It's all kind of integrated into the OS, so it's super simple to activate. Using ExpressVPN, you can safely surf on public Wi-Fi and know that you are not being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. It's all encrypted and protected. And for less than $7 a month, you can get the same ExpressVPN protection that I use on my phone and my laptop. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. You can protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twig. That's expressvpn.com/twig. You'll get 3 extra months free when you do that with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/twig to learn more. Okay, so government stuff. First of all, House voted, of course, as expected, voted for the Save the Internet Act. So now it faces the challenge. This is, of course, going to face a lot of pushback from Republicans who lead the Senate. Mitch McConnell calls it dead on arrival. Also, Trump has basically said that he plans to veto this, from what I understand. What do you think? I mean, this. So then, does that make this more or less just symbolic than anything else?
I guess.
I mean, if Republicans don't plan on doing anything in the Senate, and the president's going to veto it, even if they do, I mean, that's not reason not to do it. But where next then?
So this is a good, litmus test or something for the midterms?
Okay.
Not midterms.
The election.
The opposite of midterms.
Yeah, the upcoming term.
So, yeah, the term. So as that, is that start, it'll give people a talking point.
You
put them in a spot where we voted for, you voted against, they're against net neutrality.
Now we can have all of our attack ads. So he voted for or against or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. How much that is, but everything else going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened. But then there's this kind of larger trend that's happening right now. In one case, Australia passed a social media law on the heels of, you know, the Christchurch massacre that happened a few weeks prior to this. They sped through a law that would require social media companies to remove violent content, things like kidnapping, murders, rape, terror attacks, that sort of stuff. It doesn't really address hate speech, which was pivotal to what happened at Christchurch. But Australia nonetheless pushed this through very rapidly, I think in like 5 days from inception to passing it through. The UK released their online harms white paper. This was published on Monday.
Which I have right here.
Oh.
I've read almost the entire thing.
Oh, good.
And I've had to be pulled back from suicide a few times.
Oh, boy.
They're killing the net. Oh, it's awful. It's awful.
I wish I had read it so I could act as a nice counterpoint.
Well, so no, I don't think you would, Stacey. I actually don't think you would. So this is so what they're doing is they're going to tell the platforms you're responsible for taking down illegal content and illegal behavior. Okay. And then they're going to tell them, well, you also have to take down legal but harmful behavior.
Right. What is that? What is the line there?
That is a nightmare for speech. So for example, they want to outlaw trolling. Okay. Define it. No, that you define it. And if you don't do it right, if you don't define it, we're going to take away a huge amount of money, and we're going to fine not only you, big company, we're going to fine your executives. Meanwhile, the other report that was out recently says we're also going to fine the programmers. Disinformation. That's a fun one. How do you get rid of legal disinformation? The things your Uncle Joe says to you is now illegal. So what's going to happen, obviously, is that the platforms are going to play safe and pull down anything that has to do with conversation. So this applies to anyone. Oh, let's see if I can find it real quickly. I can't believe I spent my time reading this junk.
You got to read something.
That's true. I can find better things. So it's called a duty of care, that you should just be right in advance and do this stuff and figure it out. Here it is. The regulatory framework should apply, quote, to companies that allow users to share or discover user-generated content or interact with each other online, period. That's the entirety of the net. It's conversation. Mm-hmm. And any conversation is now going to be regulated. Now, meanwhile, they're not sure what to do about private channels. They're trying to figure that out, which means that the bad guys will just go down into them. And it's terrible, terrible, terrible law in the making. It's really, really frightening. Meanwhile, though, Stacey, I'm going to surprise you here. Unless, okay. Carson, did I talk to the internet court before?
I don't think I did. Talk about it again, and then I'll cut you off if you start getting repetitive.
Carson's memory is not 100% all the time. It's like 95%.
I kind of tune out a lot when Jeff's talking.
Hey, I thought we were Goombas. I thought we were friends.
He's cackling maniacally right now.
No, these Ivy boys could be cruel. Oh. So I joined a high-level working group, a transatlantic high-level working group on content moderation and freedom of expression. And out of this came, and it's Chatham House rules, so I can't say who said what. And I want to in some cases, but they said they don't want to be quoted. But there, a very smart person proposed internet courts. And the argument here is that the platforms are being put in a position, this is in Germany, it's true, with this it's true, in Australia it's true, where they're being told, you go find the legal stuff, you decide if it's illegal, and you get rid of it. Never mind the legal but harmful, but just even the legal stuff, right? What's illegal? In Germany, NetzDG, they've got to decide what is manifestly illegal on their own within 24 hours, or they get sued huge amounts of money. So it even got to the point that the German authorities said they were taking down too much. Well, of course they were, because they were playing safe. The problem with this is, obviously, that the companies don't know how to do this. So they're making it up as they go. It's all in secret. There's no due process. So this very smart person proposed an internet court, nation to nation, that would be trained judges, and that the internet company, when it came to any dispute, they weren't sure if it was illegal. The person who did it said, no, you're wrong, company. It's not illegal, or whatever. It goes to the court. And the point of this smart person was that then due process comes back in, number one. Number two, this is doing things in the bright light of public. And number three, that's where we're supposed to negotiate our legal norms in this world, is in court, in the public, with due process. And so I found that actually appealing, because then the government is doing what the government's supposed to do. It should be write very clear laws and have very clear enforcement of them in the courts with due process. Now then, in terms of the legal but harmful, that should be a matter of the company's own terms of service with their users, where, for example, Facebook says naked breasts, no. I think it's dumb, but they can do that, right? That's their definition of harmful, God help us. And the way it works in the U.S. under the Federal Trade Commission structure is that any company can have guarantees they make to their customers. The Federal Trade Commission doesn't care what those guarantees are, except if you violate that, if you don't stand up to the covenant you make with your customers, then they come after you, in essence, for consumer fraud. You said you'd do it, you didn't. So you split that world up where you have variable standards set by platform, and you can decide, I like this platform, I don't like this platform because of their rules, whatever, but those are their rules. And the company is monitored based on whether or not it meets its own rules. That's in the legal framework. And in the illegal framework, the company still has to play police because the scale is too huge. They still have to find the stuff. But they're only liable once they've been notified something's bad, once they don't act. And if they have any doubt, now they have a court to go to. So that's a regulatory regime that starts to make sense to me. Ta-da. I wrote it up on Medium.
Yes.
I was with you until the ta-da, and now I'm like, no, we're just teasing Jeff. No, I like it. I should read your stuff.
You're a kind of person. You're ta-da.
I'm a what kind of person?
You're a ta-da kind of person.
Oh, totally. Yes.
So you're jealous. I did it.
Ta-da.
You have the turf.
Yeah, Jeff. Nah. Jeff beat you to the ta-da, didn't he?
No, I think it really drove his point home in a very, very clear way.
Internet.
Meanwhile, governments are going berserko. Yeah. You also have the French fake news law. You have Singapore; they have a fake news law where things that are wrong are illegal. That's a fast track to authoritarianism. And these governments don't know what the F to do. They already have laws in almost every case. They're not enforcing them. They're forcing the companies to enforce them with no clear guidelines. Companies don't know what to do. They're messing up. This is a mess. I completely agree. But if you read this online harms report, it's just amazing. They're just flailing over themselves saying, if we don't like it, you shouldn't have it, you bad companies, and we're going to blame you for it. And by the way, and one more thing. Only once so far, I haven't finished every word, but only once did I see a reference of taking the actual illegal actor to the authorities, right? So constantly the platforms are being blamed for everything that's being done on them. And if someone is harassing someone, if someone is spewing terrorist or racist hate, vitriol, and if the country wants to say that's illegal, then what of the person who spews it? Forget where it was spewed. Go to the spewer. Sorry.
Well, it really seems to me when you put... Okay, wait a minute. The more I think about that, yeah, that is a little weird. The way
if I had a type spewer, go after the spewer.
Who is the spewer in this case? The way that you're man, I totally lost my train of thought. Spewer just derailed me. I need someone spewer. To jump in because now I can't.
So
yeah.
So the spewer is probably protected by free speech.
Oh, there, here we go. Yes.
Or no, it can be also, well, I mean, so you're,
behavior, what I'm saying is then go after the person who does the illegal behavior rather than the one who accidentally carries it.
So if you're saying someone inciting violence or inciting harm, I mean, they're very, and are those actual laws or are they interpretations of laws brought forth by the Constitution?
Depends on the country. In a place like Germany, right, it is illegal to deny the Holocaust.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So
platform is being told you must take that down. Okay, that's the law. Okay. But then hardly ever do we hear of a process that goes to the person who actually does that. The platform is being blamed for the behaviors of the public upon it. And it's expected to clean up the public. I was on MSNBC this week about all this. And So the anchor says, come on, Jeff, white nationalism, because there was going to be the hearing about this, which we'll talk about more in a second. White nationalism, get rid of white nationalism. And I said, and pardon me, Leo, we get nervous right now, so I'm going to say something political. But pardon me, I'm going to say it, and just don't at me. There are white nationalists. There's a white nationalist in Congress. There's a few in the White House. You get rid of all the white nationalism online, you haven't solved our problem in society. We have a problem with racism in society. And I think there's this belief that if we could just clean up the internet, everything's going to be okay again. No.
Okay.
That was my set. That's fair. Shirley Temple station. It'll be okay again. So no, that's not the case. But what's happening is it's moral panic. Pardon me. See, I said it. We're blaming the technology for all these human behaviors, and we're stopping at the technology, and we're not going to the root cause or to the root players. And so there was a hearing this week. Facebook and Google, white nationalism. And you have a story in the rundown about what happened to the live feed comments.
Well, they got overtaken by comments along those lines, along those very lines. They proved.
They came in and said, you don't like us? Here we are.
Right.
That's what's going on in society right now. We've got bigger problems. I'm not saying that platforms are blameless. I'm not saying that they are without responsibility. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. Yes, should they set their own rules to get rid of white nationalism? Yeah, I actually think so. That's their choice to do. Mm-hmm. But when government tells them they must, that's de facto illegal. And that has a problem with our First Amendment.
Well, so if the government... No, and you're right. And so if you think about the government trying to go after people through the platforms, though... So you're right about this being... it is an effective mirror. I would say... It's both a mirror of the worst of our society, but it also does magnify it, which is kind of the problem. Now I'm like, why don't we go after? Is it because Google won't give away identity for people who are, do we need rules that make it acceptable or a consent when you sign up for platforms that in the case of, but then you get into this issue that in the case of hate speech or something actually illegal that you would pass that over to authorities, but then authorities may use that and overstep their bounds. I'm just thinking out loud here.
Sure. And would users use a service that had the ability to analyze their use and determine whether a user's approach to using that service falls into the good category or the bad category? Would I, as a user, even if my intention is not bad, would I, as a user, trust the service to be able to make that determination and to hand my information over?
The authorities. Right. So Lindsey Graham, I'm back in an echo room because I was too loud out there. Lindsey Graham, accused the platforms this week of a left-wing bias and what they choose to kill. The platforms are they may be the richest beasts on earth, and they control the world, but give a little sympathy here. They're stuck in a no-win position here.
Yeah,
they're like parents with their kids fighting in the back seat. He's got this. You're taking his side. No, no. Oh my God. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So we need a more nuanced discussion of this. We need to go after the bad behaviorists, the spewers. We need to go after the core cause and roots of this. We need to do a lot, but that's what I spew about moral panic. What I'm saying is it's a simplistic blame game that says the technology is causing all this. It's much more complex than that, and a bunch of laws, a bunch of regulations, a bunch of fines against technology companies aren't going to do it. Then where are we?
Yeah, from the perspective of the people who wrote the white paper as one example, from their perspective, they're thinking you choke this off at the source, right? Like it's like you stop the flow of water through the hose at the beginning of that hose by clinching it off, not thinking about the unintended consequences, of course, just thinking about how can we make the most effect to this problem right now instead of dragging this out further. And I can understand the desire to pay attention to this and make it important to do something now. But yeah, it really feels like kind of that unintended consequence aspect of it is so blown out.
And again, some things are illegal. They should be enforced. Child porn is the one we all agree to immediately. Mm-hmm. Inciting terrorism. Yeah, I think probably we'd pretty much agree. Mm-hmm. But when it gets to things like in the German law, insult, in this regulation, proposed regulation, disinformation, they're just not thinking this through.
Yeah.
And they're creating things that cannot be enforceable, and so you cannot win.
Yes.
And meanwhile, Zuckerberg is going for worldwide regulation. That's what he wrote in his op-ed, which I'm sure was discussed while we were here, so I don't want to go into depth on it. But understandably, he's saying, this is a pain dealing with all these countries. Can't you go up with just one? Well, then we're going to end
worldwide,
up...
Well, yeah, that's never going to work because every culture has different standards and norms.
And if the platforms say we're going to go with the lowest common denominator of freedom and the highest watermark of regulation, then we're all living in China.
Mm-hmm. Ah! And sometimes I feel like Mark was being a bit disingenuous there in many ways, because that is never going to happen. And by calling for it, it's like calling for.
I think he would love it if it happened.
Well, yes, it would be very convenient for him. But the idea that that's
for
happened,
him, yeah.
and I think that if we. Oh, this is so hard. I mean, people are hard. Social mores, and we see this, and this is something that changes over time, which is both good and bad. You could call it, if you look at King's arc of moral justice, we've changed a lot as a country in the last, 60 years. But actually, I guess it's now 70 years. But we do have further to go, and other countries are far behind, and some are like way ahead. And on some issues, we're very progressive, and on others, we're incredibly conservative. So this is just hard.
You mean we're not going to solve it right now on this episode of This Week in Google?
Well, I solved it. It's on Medium. It's there. That's it.
Courts. That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although courts are subject to politicization. I'm not going to be able to say that word. But yeah, people will use politics and how they. Wait, what, Jeff?
So get that woman another shot of tequila.
Oh, just you wait till my special thing.
We're all drinking shots today. Should we do the change log?
The Google change log.
We got a lot of things on the changelog, so I'll rattle them off here. Dropbox showed off a new feature at Google Cloud Next apparently they had teased this in March, but integrated Google Docs sheets and slides editing within Dropbox itself. And apparently this is something that we're going to see a little bit more of, this kind of cross collaboration between services. So you don't
like
have to.
The clouds, yeah.
I was going to say, are they going to use containers?
Probably. Maybe this is the prime example. Also, third-party add-on support coming to G Suite in coming months as a beta. Idea here is to lessen the need to, again, jump between apps when doing things. So integrating Evernote into the sidebar of Gmail is one example that they showed off, so that you don't need to leave your Gmail in order to go into Evernote where your notes are, that sort of stuff. So they've got partners Box, Evernote, Asana, DocuSign, QuickBooks, 15 of them at launch and more over time. We already talked about Google Assistant, the new security tools for G Suite. So they have a new security sandbox that will actually execute attachments before letting you open them. So they execute those in the sandbox so that it can't affect you once you open it on your end. It can detect, what's going on there before it hits your side of things. Also a new security and alert center for admins. For single security services, best practices, tools, and addressing threats. And also along the security tip, this is kind of cool. Google announced that Android devices running Android 7 or higher can act as a physical security key for two-factor authentication, so you don't need an extra dongle like the Titan security key that they rolled out last year.
So explain how that works versus the late two-factor, which I do now, and then heavy was the dongle. So yeah. How does this...
So if you have a computer, let's say you have a Chromebook, I'm assuming this will work with a Chromebook that supports Bluetooth, you would connect your phone via Bluetooth to the Chrome browser to verify your logins. So your phone is connecting wirelessly. That is your your hardware connection, essentially.
And because there's been a lot of Bluetooth exploits. Granted, you do have to be really close, so within Bluetooth range. Right. But cool.
Yeah, another option. Oh, you just said the magic word.
You sure you want to say that? Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
My notes were covered with an assistant bubble. So yes, this is going to work in Gmail, G Suite, Google Cloud, any Google account service, essentially using FIDO authentication standard. Let's see here. Google Plus for Enterprise Google Plus is dead, and they needed to do something with Google Plus for Enterprise, so it got a new name. And in usual Google fashion, it's kind of confusing. Google Currents is its name, and that's confusing because Google Currents was something that Google did back in 2011. It was a magazine app that they released.
It powered Waves.
Yeah, right. Sorry. See, that's what it should have. 2 years later, they renamed it Google News. So I guess the name was available again. And, you know, it was long ago enough that you probably aren't still holding on to that. So that's available today in beta form. Assistant. We talked a little bit about the ads coming into Assistant, but there are also some new features. Cards are getting more information dense and more interactive. So they showed off a number of different examples of this. Like if you did a search for Alphabet stock before, you would get just the really basic, like four or five pieces of information about where it's at right now. And after, you get like a full chart where you can select like, you know, the performance over a year or the last month or the last week, a lot more information making their way into the cards. Also new tools in Assistant like bubble level, tip calculator, mortgage calculator, color picker, and some other things. So making Assistant smarter. And then finally, Google Smart Compose. Gmail may not have inbox bundles yet. And yes, I will say this every time there's a new feature added to Gmail until it happens, but it did bring smart replies into subject lines. So, for example, if you wrote an email and in the body you said, "Hey, happy birthday, Craig. It's really great that you were born." Then the subject might, you know, give you the option of saying happy birthday.
So it would change it after you've written it?
No.
You write the email first.
Right. If you went in and typed a bunch of stuff.
Who writes their emails without having the subject? Do you guys write your emails first and not your subject
line? No, I don't, but I know some people who hate doing subject lines.
Oh, weird.
There is that, yeah. I don't always, but every once in a while I do. Because I've got like the idea for the email in my head. I'm just like, fire it off. And then I go and do the subject line at the end. Sure. But not every time.
Okay.
You see, what they'll probably do too is find out what the open rate is on different subject lines.
A/B testing for your memos. Oh,
we know for sure that if you put this in your subject line, put the word free, people are guaranteed to open it.
Oh my God, the pitches that I might get after that.
Yes. And that's all I have in the Google changelog. There's probably more, but
there's so much more.
But Carson's wife's birthday.
Carson's wife's birthday, yes.
Is coming up. And we're already 5 minutes past the time that I told him we were definitely going to be done. So let's thank the final sponsor, and then we will do our tips and tricks, and we'll get Carson to his celebration.
One thing first.
Yeah.
Let us pay tribute to the black hole and to the young woman.
Oh, yes.
We cannot leave before we do that.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Today's a really big day, right? For celebrating women and STEM, because computer scientist Katie Bowman, who got her bachelor's in 2011, she was the lead of the development of the first algorithm to actually show a black hole for the very first time. 3 years ago, she began the development of this algorithm, approximately 1,000 disks, 5 petabytes of data, and today the image is released. The first time a black hole has been photographed using the Event Horizon Telescope. There it is. That is amazing. Uh-huh. That is so cool.
It's great. And that picture of her, which we're showing on the air, it's just so wonderful.
I love this story, and I love that she's being celebrated for this, because I mean, that's a breakthrough right there.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it up, because I really did want to get that in there and I completely spaced it. Okay, sorry. That was a horrible pun. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Thousand Eyes. Get an immediate and unmatched view of all the networks and dependencies that impact your users. Digital experience. So let's talk a little bit about cloud adoption. We've talked about cloud in this episode. Let's talk about adoption and doing it right, because cloud is obviously, it's great for business, but there is, of course, a trade-off. When you gain agility, you increase risk and you lose control. When your cloud app or service goes down, How do you know what went wrong that led to that? As you scramble to find the root cause of the problem, you are losing revenue. You're impacting employee productivity. You're damaging your brand. You need instant visibility into the entire service delivery path from the cloud to your end user, including the portions that you don't own or control. And that's where ThousandEyes comes in. It's unlike anything you've seen before. ThousandEyes is cloud-based software built to help organizations do the cloud right. A massive array of vantage points span the global internet, cloud providers, and even the Wi-Fi in your local coffee shop. Old school IT monitoring is passive. It operates in silos and can only see inside the data center, no use in the cloud. ThousandEyes' unique path visualization technology extends beyond any boundaries, allowing you to see, to understand, and improve the experience for all of your apps, your services, and your websites. Regain control and ensure the best possible digital experience for your customers and employees. You can make sure you're in the right cloud, connected to the right SaaS instance, and see issues before they impact your customers and employees with ThousandEyes. Join the top banks, enterprises, SaaS companies, and the world's largest and fastest growing brands that rely on ThousandEyes software to do the cloud and to do it right. Visit ThousandEyes.com/twit. You can see what you've been missing. You'll get the exclusive ebook on the 5 cloud migration challenges you shouldn't ignore. If the cloud is important to you, either today or in your future, you'll want to visit ThousandEyes.com/twit. That's ThousandEyes.com/twit. ThousandEyes, thrive in a connected world, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Google. All right. So let's start off with a cocktail, Stacey. What you got?
It's spring, and people's thoughts turn to alcohol or not. this is a cooling cocktail. I really was teched out, and I'll be honest, you guys, it could be bad because I am moving in the next few weeks. But this cocktail is called the Verdant Lady. I have never had it or heard about it before, but I made it, and it is awesome. It is a gin, chartreuse, and mint cocktail.
That sounds delightful.
It is. Ooh. It's herby, but it's not super sweet. If you want something super sweet, you could add more simple, but it's really well balanced. I would use a gin that is more of a neutral gin, maybe a little sweeter gin. So the default here would be like Hendrick's. If you wanted to go straight neutral, you could go with like a Tanqueray. Mm-hmm. But more of you would probably go more for a Bombay or a Hendrick's is my bet, because people tend to like sweeter stuff. But it's really good, and it's really easy to make. This person also has lovely photographs. But I just thought I'd share that with you. And once you have chartreuse in your bar, you can make all sorts of awesome drinks, such as The Last Word, which is yes. another one of my favorites.
Last Word's so good. Yep.
So good. So much alcohol, though. Got to really watch
That's
those.
Why it's The Last Word.
I'm like, if you make a last word with whiskey instead of gin, it's called The Final Say.
Oh.
So there you go.
Thank you. This is like perfect timing. I am throwing I hope my wife does not listen to This Week in Google. I'm throwing a surprise birthday party, cocktail party for her birthday next week. And I need to come up with a couple of like cocktails to make sure we have the right stuff for. So this is going on the list.
There you go.
Thank you. Perfect timing. It's like you knew. It's like
my birthday.
It's as if
dude,
your
I'll
birthday was this. Yes, was this month too? Cool. Thank you, Stacey. Jeff, what you got for your number?
More is the number. More. So there is now appears to be fairly confirmed reports that the Pixelbook Group has new laptops and tablets inbound, says The Verge.
Oh, really?
Because when they lost some people and so on, there was presumption it was going to be killed, but Google confirmed to The Verge that no, it has more coming its way.
Interesting.
That makes me very happy indeed. It's time for my. I think. How old is the latest Pixelbook? Like, I think I've had this for 2 years now.
So the Pixel Slate, which is what I'm using, is last October, and so the Pixelbook is the October before.
So I'm hoping IO they might announce a few things. That'd be nice.
Man, I wouldn't be surprised. It would be an interesting reversal if they had some hardware announcements of some sort.
It would be. They haven't done that in a while. They used to do it, but they haven't done it in a while.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got the Pixel 3a kind of on the horizon. There's rumors about a Galaxy or a Pixel Watch. So who knows? I don't know. I think a part of me would be pretty surprised if they had a hardware announcement at I/O, but maybe around that time, you know, maybe they spread it out a little bit, maybe sometime soon. So interesting. Okay. I hadn't heard that news. That was news to me. My pick is an app that I discovered probably about 3 weeks ago. I mean, I'd heard of it. I'd heard of All Trails before, but I wanted to find a trail. I wanted to, my wife and I had like a date day, and I was like, well, why don't we go for a hike and make it a photo hike where we'll take pictures and, you know, just hike along, whatever. But I don't know where to take us. Where are we going to go? So All Trails is a really cool app that I've been kind of getting
into. I've used that. It is awesome.
Yes. This is really cool.
Yes. And it is a great app.
Now, so there is a free version or $29.99 a year, which $29.99 a year, if you plan on using this regularly, is probably a good thing. It allows you to do offline maps and a number of other elevations. It gives you elevation.
Like, I get very excited when I'm hiking a mountain. It's like, you've hiked this high, and you're like, oh, look at me, up awesome.
Yeah,
but offline maps are super important.
Yes, okay, absolutely. It. So it'll GPS give you GPS directions to the trailhead, because sometimes trails don't begin, you know, where a road is or whatever. You can track your route with GPS, view your day, download for offline, of course, follow other people's new routes or alterations to routes. So like, this is Helen Putnam Outer Loop here in Petaluma. You get a little description. It gives you these tags as far as like what you could expect if it's wildflower season. You know, you can isolate to those tags. And then it gives you a view on a map of the actual trail. And you can see other people who have taken these trails and modified them. So you can choose to follow their modified kind of direction on those trails if they maybe extended it by a couple of miles or whatever. You get your elevation. Of course, I could download it. But I just thought it was really cool. Oh, and of course, like, you know, people will give their reviews and you can do the same. So I found this really helpful because here in the Bay Area, it's been very wet. And so when you go hiking, you run the risk of running into very muddy areas. And you can see in here, for example, 1 week ago, 4 stars hiking. You know, they might mention, you know, be on alert for poison oak and ticks. But a month ago, it was really muddy. And I remember that because that's about the time that we went hiking. It was super muddy. So you can kind of check in on it and be like, well, what are the conditions of this particular trail right now? And like, I'll go into my history and show. This was set the 17th. We went to on a hike in Novato, and it, you know, it tracked my whole hike. It also, I took a couple of photos along the way. So it drops a pinpoint where you take a photo and associates it with that point on the map. And it's just a cool app for if you want to go hiking, or maybe you want to go mountain biking or running. You can filter for like dog friendly, kid friendly, wheelchair accessible, all that stuff. And it's just really useful. So it's called All Trails. And I'm sure there's an iOS version of this, probably one of those, you know, cross-platform apps. But I really like the Android app a lot. And, you know, get out in the wilderness a little bit. Why don't you? But that is it. I think we've reached the end. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun. As usual, I love doing a show with you, too. Thank you so much for letting me crash a party. Appreciate it.
Likewise. And I like how you took my cocktail that's bad for you and you countered with something that's good for you.
This is what you do. Do you do the trail the day before or the day after? What's the proper order?
I would do it before and then have your Verdant Lady. That's just me.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. Stacy, of course, IoTpodcast.com. Stacy on IoT.com. At Giga Stacy on Twitter. Am I missing anything, Stacy?
That was no.
Regal wave she did there. A little bit of.
No, it was open. It was not the Regal.
Oh, it was open. Okay. Okay.
Well, Stacy, thank you so much. Stacey. Appreciate it. And you're moving in 2 weeks, right?
Well, we hopefully close on my birthday. It's 2 weeks late on the close. Wow. And so next week, if I'm gone, it's because I am packing and I will move on the following Monday.
Can't wait to see your new studio.
No, I'm moving to Austin. And then I'm moving to Seattle a month after that. It's a two-step.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Texas two-step move.
No kidding.
A lot of Verdant Ladies in my future.
You got a lot of change happening in your life right now.
Yeah. Stacy Changelog. Okay. Oh, Karsten, go, go.
Okay, thank you, Stacy. All right, and Jeff, always so much fun to get the chance to chat with you. I'm sure I'm going to see you at Google I.O. here next month, right?
Yes, exactly. And I want to thank again Metro Cowork here in Rochester, who were kind enough to let me broadcast from their facilities.
Yes, in about every room that exists there, because I think you were.
I did. They actually asked me to come back in here, so yeah. But I got excited. You know?
Jeff, thank you so much. Buzzmachine.com to follow everything that Jeff is doing as he gallivants around the world.
And a farewell again to Divya Mystery, who was here, who said hello as a fan, happening to be just in the room. So I think it's so cool.
Absolutely. So, love it. Divya, love it. Thank you so much. We do the show every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 2000 UTC. You can go to twit.tv/TWIG. That's the show page for This Week in Google. There you'll find all of the previous episodes, links to subscribe to audio, to video. Pretty much everything that you need to know is listed there. Show notes, all that stuff for This Week in Google. I'm just now filling in for Leo. Leo will be back next week, so you will see him sitting in his bigger chair, his more impressive chair at this set. But I look forward to the next time that I can hop on. Thanks again for welcoming me to the show and allowing me to be a part of it, because I really do have a great time doing the show with these two. It's just a lot of fun. That is it for this week. The dog's saying it's time to go, so we'll see you next week, and have a wonderful week, and I hope you get to your party, Karsten. Is it a party? I don't know if it's a party, but farewell. Bye.